This week's parsha is Parsha Va'eschanan, and we will begin on page 958. Parsha Va'eschanan, Tavshin Ayin Ches. Okay, first pasuk in the parsha. For Eschanan el Hashem, and I beseeched Hashem, Bo'esahi Lamar, at that time saying. This is Moshe Rabbeinu talking. And he's saying, at that time I beseeched God saying, Hashem Elokim, Atoha Chilois el Haris as Abdecha, you have begun to show your servant, Eskadlecha, your greatness, Yadcha Chazaka, and your strong hand, Hashem Mikel Bashramu Ba'aretz, who is a God like you, a power like you in heaven and earth, Ashayasech Ma'asech V'chig V'raisecha, that can do like your actions and your mighty deeds. Ebra Na V'Ere'es Aretz HaTayva Shaba'eva HaYarden. Let me cross now and I will see the good land that is on the other side of the Jordan. Ha'har HaTayv HaZev HaLavanayin, this good mountain and the Levanayin. Vayis aber Hashem bi lamanchem, God became angry at me for your sake. V'loy shema Eloi, he did not listen to me. V'yema Hashem Eloi Ravlach, and Hashem said to me, too much for you. Al toisef aber Eloi oid ba'davar hazeh, do not continue to discuss this matter with me anymore. Okay, so here is where the Torah tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem to basically rescind the decree that Hashem put on Moshe, not to allow him into Eretz Yisrael, after the sin of the May Meriva. Moshe davened that Hashem should allow him in. And there is a famous medrash that says, how many prayers did Moshe Rabbeinu pray to Hashem now to allow him into the land of Israel? The answer is 515. Where do we get the number 515? Because you take the word Va'eschanan, which is where Moshe Rabbeinu says, and I implored, if you take the numerical value of that word, you will come out with 515. Vav is 6, Aleph is 1, that's 7, Tav is 400, 407, and 8 is 415, Nun, 50, and 50 is 100, comes out to 515. 515 prayers he offered to Hashem that he should get in. And it doesn't mean 550. Well, again, it's not clear to us. We don't know when he prayed 515 times. Did he pray the same thing 515 times? Did he pray differently 515 times? There are those who say clearly that it was 515 different approaches, 500 different ways that how Moshe was trying to convince Hashem to allow him into the land of Israel. The psukim in front of us say what he said to Hashem, but there is much that lies in these words. Now, what's interesting is that Moshe Rabbeinu says, and I daven to Hashem, I beseech Hashem, bo eis hahi, at that time. At that time. What time is that time? So Rashi tells us, bo eis hahi, at that time means, this is Rashi in the right column, four lines from the top of the Rashi in the right. Bo'eis hahi, la'achar shekavashi eret Sichon ve'Og. After I conquered the land of Sichon and Og, the two Amorite kings, demisi, I thought, shemuhutara neder, perhaps the vow has been taken off. Meaning, being that Hashem allowed Moshe to conquer the land outside of Eretz Yisrael, which was meant to be part of what the Jewish people were to own. It even had a status of Israel to a certain degree. Moshe Rabbeinu thinks, well, if Hashem is allowing me into this part, Hashem is allowing me to give to the Jewish, helping, is allowing me to be the one to give to the Jewish people these lands, perhaps now's the time I can ask to be allowed to give to conquer and give over to the Jewish people the rest of the lands. That's according to Rashi, that's the Ba'es Hahi. That's the at that time. Basically, Moshe Rabbeinu, according to Rashi, Moshe Rabbeinu sees, he sees a Pesach, he sees a possibility, he sees an opening. Now, the Aruch Chaim comments that if you follow this approach, then it would seem that if Moshe Rabbeinu was davening now because he sees that he's already been allowed to conquer the lands of Sichon and Og, then it would seem that, you know, this was the time and this was it. You know, Moshe saw an opening, so he davened. Without this opening, he didn't daven, and after that, he didn't daven further. That's what would seem, you know, if they're saying the time is based on what Moshe Rabbeinu already accomplished, and it's based on that accomplishment that he davened, that until now he didn't daven. Until now he didn't daven. Now was the time to daven. And that was when he implored Hashem whatever way he could, and he poured out his heart to Hashem at this time. But at this time, not before, because he saw an opening. Until now, he never saw an opening. The Aruch Chaim cites other midrashim, other sources, that Ba'es Hahi means other times. Some say Ba'es Hahi means what Hashem said, Lo Yisaviyu Es HaKol, you shall not bring this congregation. Okay, that's in Midbar Chaf, which is at the point of the Sin of Meimariva. After Moshe Rabbeinu hits the rock, what does Hashem say to him? Hashem says to him, Lochein lo yisaviyu es hakol hazeh la'aretz asher nasati lahem. This is what Hashem made the decree that you cannot bring them into the land. So the Aruch Chaim cites certain midrashim that say that when did Moshe Rabbeinu do this davening? Then, right then and there. When Hashem said to him, you shall not bring, that's when Moshe started imploring Hashem. He cites another midrash that when did Moshe Rabbeinu start davening to Hashem to rescind the decree? When Hashem told him, take Yeshua. When Hashem told him, take Yeshua to be the person who's going to replace you, that's when Moshe decided to daven and say and try to get the decree to be rescinded. So the Aruch Chaim suggests that perhaps they're all right. All these opinions are right. Perhaps Moshe Rabbeinu davened a number of times. There are a number of times that he did it. He did it when the decree was first made. He did it when he was told to take Yeshua. He did it after Sichon Va'ik. And when Moshe Rabbeinu says, I davened to Hashem at that time means at a couple of times. Not just one time, a couple of times. Different times, when basically Moshe Rabbeinu, again, in the case of when Hashem first told him you can't bring, Moshe Rabbeinu right away davens. When Moshe Rabbeinu is told make a new leader, he davens after Sichon Va'ik, where, you know, apparently something's happening, he davens. So the Aruch Chaim suggests that perhaps he davened at a number of times, not just at one time, but at a number of times. Okay, that's one point. Now, the next point comes from the commentary Rabbeinu Bechaya. So Moshe Rabbeinu is now telling us, he starts up saying, and I implored Hashem, okay, to allow him into the land of Israel. But how does Moshe start his prayer? He says, Hashem, you have begun to show your servant your greatness, your strong hand, who is like you in heaven and earth, that can do like what you do. Let me go into the land. What's the connection, Asher Ben Abachaya? What is the connection between that pasuk where Moshe Rabbeinu says, you have begun to show me your greatness, who is like you, let me go into the land? What's the connection exactly here? What is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? How is that part of his tefillah that he should be allowed into the land of Israel? So, Rabbeinu Bechaya, Rashi has an explanation. Rabbeinu Bechaya says like this. Rabbeinu Bechaya says that actually this, when Moshe Rabbeinu says these words, you have begun to show your servant your greatness, what Moshe Rabbeinu is referring to is the giving of the Torah. That's what he's referring to. You have begun, this whole pasuk is referring to the giving of the Torah. And the Rabbeinu Bechaya shows that we have, that all the words in these pasuk correspond to words that we find that appear by the giving of the Torah. So for instance, Moshe says, you have begun to show your servant as gadlacha, your greatness. Well, we have a pasuk by the giving of the Torah that says, as kvoidei ves gadlai, Hashem's honor and his greatness. You find the word greatness by the giving of the Torah. Yadcha chazaka, the strong hand, the Rebbeinu Bechaya says, corresponds to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu says, v'eskoylo shemanim mitoyach ha'esh, we heard his voice from the fire. That corresponds somehow to his strong hand. When Moshe says, who is like you in heaven and earth, that corresponds to what when Moshe Rabbeinu, when going through the giving of the Torah, says, "Min Hashamayim Ishmiachas Kaleli Asreka." From the heaven, Hashem made his voice be heard. V'ala Oretz Harachas Isha Gadol, on the land, He showed His great fire. That's who is like you in heaven and earth. We find the Pesukim of Matan Torah focusing on Hashem is who from Shemayim He heard, let His voice be heard, on the land He showed His fire. When Moshe says Ashayasech Masecha Bashamayim Chigurasech Baaretz, okay, who can do like your actions in heaven and your mighty acts on the earth, as mentioned that pasuk before, okay? The fact that Moshe starts addressing Hashem with the two names of Hashem, Hashem Elokim. You know what that responds to? Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. The first of the Aseres Hadibros starts Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. I am Hashem, your God. So therefore, says Rabbeinu Bachaya, that all these words are corresponding to the giving of the Torah. And Moshe Rabbeinu was saying the following: You have begun to show your servant. What does that mean? You began to show. You began the giving of the Torah through me. And you began to show your greatness, your outstretched hand, who is like you in heaven and earth, that can do like what you do. You began to show your servant your greatness. You began the giving of the Torah through me, says Moshe. The Torah is not complete until the Jewish people come into the land of Israel. So you've begun the giving of the Torah with me. What do we say? Hamascha b'mitzvah? Somebody who starts a mitzvah? I remember like Gemar, we tell him finish it.
Yeah.
That is what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying here. Moshe Rabbeinu was not just talking about the loftiness of Hashem. All of this is referring to Hashem's loftiness in regard to the giving of the Torah. And Moshe says, you began to show your servant all these things, all these parts of the Torah. The beginning of showing means you began the giving of the Torah in showing me all these things. You began the giving of the Torah through me. Now allow me to finish it. Allow me to take them into Eretz Yisrael and finish teaching them the laws, finish teaching them and giving them the laws of the Torah that can only be fulfilled in the land of Eretz Yisrael. So that is how the Rabbeinu Bachaya explains this pasuk in the context of Moshe Rabbeinu's request to be let into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And there is a famous medrash that says Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to enter the land of Israel not because of its fruits, not because of anything other than the fact that he wanted to do the mitzvahs that can only be done in the land of Eretz Yisrael. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's deep reason for why he wanted to go in. And he made many different, again, and he laid out many different arguments to the Rabbeinu Shalom to allow him to come in. But Rabbi Chaya says, what lies in this pasuk is his argument: you started giving me the Torah, allow me to finish the job in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Moshe says, now that's the second pasuk. The third pasuk, Moshe says, Ebra na, let me pass in now, v'ere'e es ha'aretz ha'toiva, and I will see the good land. So the Orach Chaim asks, first of all, why does Moshe say Ebra now? No, allow me to pass in now. Ebra, allow me to pass in. What do you have to say now for? And if Moshe Rabbeinu can get in, then he'll see. So why does he have to say, allow me to pass and I will see? Allow me to pass into the good land. That's it. And if you allow him to pass into the good land, he'll see it. So what is Moshe Rabbeinu exactly trying to say here? So Orach Chaim brings in a couple of very interesting interesting midrashim that actually give reasons as to why Hashem wouldn't relent and let Moshe Rabbeinu in. So there's one medrash in which Moshe Rabbeinu was told, basically, Higia zmana shel Yeshua limloich ven malchus negas bechaveret afilu kamalinima. Basically, Moshe Rabbeinu sinned. If he sinned, then he cannot enter the land. Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to rescind that. Moshe is told, look, it's time for Yeshua. It's his time now. It's his time for him to become the king. And you can't have two people sharing the kingdom, right? No king can enter the time allotted for the next king, the time allotted that Hashem allots for the next king. One king cannot enter in that time. You can't have two kings at the same time. That's one thing that Moshe was said. You want to go into Eretz Yisrael, but Yeshua has to be the leader. It's his time to be the leader, and you can't both be there at the same time. That's one thing that Moshe Rabbeinu was told. And another thing that Moshe Rabbeinu, another reading that's given, and the Arachaim says this in Parashas Devarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu says that Hashem became angry at me lamanchem, on your behalf. There's a similar pasuk like that in last week's Parsha. After Hashem tells Moshe that the people of the generation of the spies aren't going to enter the land, Moshe says, and Hashem got angry at me also, and didn't let me in. So Arachaim explains that, and this is another reason that's given, is that again, Moshe Rabbeinu cannot enter the land of Israel. Why? Because Rabbeinu Shalalem knew, especially after seeing the spy, sin of the spies, that the Jewish people would enter the land of Israel, and eventually they would fall and sin to a point that they wouldn't be deserving of the Beis HaMikdash anymore. And in essence, because of their sins, they deserve to be destroyed. But instead of taking out his anger on the Jewish people, our sages say he took it out on wood and stones. He took it out on the Beis HaMikdash, which is why there is a famous Gemara in Brachas on a pasuk. Give me a second, right? There's the Tehillim Ayin Tes. The pasuk says Mizmar LeAsaf, a song to Asaf. Asaf was a navi. Elokim boy gaim nachlasecha. Hashem, nations have come into your house, into your inheritance. So the Gemara says Mizmar Kinim Boyalei. Mizmar is a song. So Asaf is singing a song that nations have entered your inheritance, that your nations have destroyed the Beis HaMikdash and taken your land. That's not a song. That should be a kina. That should be a lamentation.
That's a dirge.
The Gemara answers, no. You know why? You know why it's a mizmar? You know why he sang it? Because Ela Shehishlecha Masrael Eitzim Vavonim V'Yishlichal Yisrael. The Gemara says that the song was the fact that instead of destroying the Jewish people, he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash instead. So the Beis HaMikdash was a replacement to allow the Jewish people to be able to survive. The Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. The Gemara in Saita says that if Moshe Rabbeinu would have built the Beis HaMikdash, it could not have been destroyed. Moshe Rabbeinu built the Mishkan. He built the Mishkan, the tabernacle. It was never destroyed. It was hidden away. It was never destroyed. If Moshe Rabbeinu would have built the Beis HaMikdash, it can never be destroyed. If it can never be destroyed, then the Jewish people are in trouble. Because how are they going to survive then?
Right.
So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, once he sins and he's not deserving of going into Eretz Yisrael anymore, the Rebbeinu Shalom now says, you can't go in. I can't change it. Because if it changes, there's going to be trouble for Klal Yisrael. So these are two reasons that Moshe Rabbeinu was told why he can't go in. Why at the end of the day, you know, he had to have a sin not to be able to go in. But the final reasons why, when he wants to go in, he can't go in, is he has these two reasons. Number one, it's time for Yeshua to take over. Number two, if you build a Beis HaMikdash, it can't be destroyed. The Jewish people will be in trouble. So therefore, says the Aruch Hayim, that this is what Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to cover. When Moshe Rabbeinu said, was beseeching Hashem, he was trying to cover all bases. So when he said, Ebra na ve'ereh, he's addressing these two issues. When he says, Ebra na, let me go in now, right? What was the first thing that we mentioned? The first thing that we mentioned that Moshe can't go in is because it's time for Yeshua to be king. See what Moshe Rabbeinu says? Ebra na, I'll go now in and I'll just go in. I won't be king. I don't care. I'm all right. I'll just go in. Ebra na, now that it's time for Yeshua, now I'll just go in. I'll just be a partial yid. You know, I'll just be like everybody else. I won't be a king. So you have a problem, two kings at the same time. I won't be a king. Ebrana, now, at this point of time, where it's time for Yeshua to take over, he'll take over, and I'll just go in. The era, and I'll see the land. That's addressing the other issue. Moshe Rabbeinu says, there's a problem, I'll build the Beis HaMikdash. I won't build the Beis HaMikdash. I'll just go in and see. I just want to see the land. I just want to go in. I just want to do the mitzvahs. That's all. If you're not going to let me be the leader, if you're not going to let me pass on the Torah, okay, so I'll just go in. Let me just go in, and I'll be able to do the mitzvahs in the land. That is how the Aruch Hayim explains why Moshe said no, and why it's Ebra and Era. What are the two things? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to address these two issues. Okay? So Moshe Rabbeinu wants to go in desperately. He wants to be able to fulfill the mitzvahs that can only be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. The issue about Yeshua has to be king, Moshe Rabbeinu says, fine, he'll be king, no problem. build the problem of building a Beis HaMikdash. I won't build the Beis HaMikdash. Era, I'll just go in and see. I'll just be there. That's it. Okay, that's Moshe Rabbeinu's. That's his argument. That's how he's trying to convince the Rebbeinu Shalom. That's why this is how he's pouring out his heart to the Rebbeinu Shalom. Pasuk Chavav. Vayisaber Hashem bi lamanchem aloi shama eloi. Hashem became angry at me and he didn't listen to me. Vayimra Hashem eloi. Hashem said to me, Rav Lach, it's too much to you, for you. Al toisef daber eloi oi badaver hazeh, do not speak to me anymore regarding this matter. All right. So now the Or HaChaim explains, what was Hashem saying to Moshe? Rav Lach, a lot to you, too much to you, which we would simply interpret it. And then he says, Al toisef daber eloi, don't speak to me anymore about it. So the Or HaChaim says like this, that when Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rav Lach, Moshe Rabbeinu Shlom is coming to respond to Moshe like this. I know you want to go into Eretz Yisrael to do the mitzvahs, right? You want to have a chance to do the mitzvahs that can only be performed in the land of Israel. That's why you want to go. Says Rabbeinu Shlom to Moshe Rabbeinu, Rav Lach, you have a lot. You don't need any more schusim. You don't need any more merits. You've got it all. You don't need any more. Or, the other way he says it is that you want to have those mitzvahs? Every mitzvah that they do in Eretz Yisrael, you have a portion in it. You know why? Because you gave them the Torah. You were the one who gave them the Torah. You were the one who taught them the Torah. And therefore, any mitzvah they do in the land of Israel, you're going to get credit for. So therefore, Rav Lach, there's much to you. You're saying you want to do the mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Lach, you've got a lot. Rav Lach, it's as much to you. Everything that they do is to your credit. So basically, he's trying to tell Moshe Rabbeinu, for you to go into Eretz Yisrael because you're saying I want to do it, Rav Lach, you have much. You've got it. You've got those mitzvahs. You've got credit for those mitzvahs. And when he says to him, okay, that's one thing that he says to Or HaChaim. He also says about Rav, he also says another interpretation of Rav Lach, which means a lot to you. This is going back also, he says, on the whole thing about Yeshua, right? Moshe Rabbeinu says, you're telling me it's time for Yeshua to be king, so I'll just go and I won't be king. Rav Lach, says the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Rav, much greatness, that's yours. As long as you're around, the greatness belongs to you. You can't be around and not have the greatness. It doesn't work. You're Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to have that greatness. And I was actually thinking that maybe the pshat in that is that, you know, one of the 13 principles of faith that the Rambam says is that we believe that Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy was, he was the greatest prophet, right? It's important to understand that Moshe Rabbeinu, who gave the Torah, he was the greatest prophet. And there's no questions on his prophecy. Therefore, it was important for, as long as Moshe's around, he's got to be on top. You can't have someone else on top of Moshe Rabbeinu, because maybe in some way or another, that's going to detract from his greatness, and detract from that greatness we have to attribute to him as one of the principles of our faith. I know that's talking about prophecy, but it could very well be that in general, Moshe Rabbeinu has to be on top. Moshe Rabbeinu has to always be on the highest level, again, as long as he's alive, because otherwise, there can maybe be questioned, there can be a place for someone to start doubting, to start questioning. And therefore, in order for that to happen, Hashem says, Rav Lach, greatness is to you. There's no such thing. You cannot be around and someone else to be greater than you. And therefore, Rav Lach, you can't go in. Can't do it. Can't go in. That's how the Or HaChaim, that's how he explains what Hashem responded to him. Okay.
Wasn't there also somebody that said that he was buried outside? So Tchias Amesim, he'll take
says that
people,
too. Yep.
All the people with him.
Yes, it does. That's correct. That's another thing that it says. Okay. Let's now turn a few pages. There's a lot in this week's Parsha. And if you look on page 972, which is Perek Vav, Pasuk Dalet, page 972, bottom two lines on the page.
Which Pasuk?
Pasuk Dalet.
Shema Yisrael.
Yep. Okay. So here we have Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hear, O Israel. Hashem is our God. Hashem is one. Ve'ahavta eis Hashem Elokecha. You shall love Hashem your God. V'chol levavcha, with all your heart. V'chol nafshcha, with all your soul. V'chol me'aydecha, and with all your possessions. Okay? Might, possessions. All right. So Rashi tells us that what does it mean, b'chol levavcha, with all your heart? B'shnei yitzarecha, with both your inclinations, with both the yetzer tov and the yetzer hara. You got to serve Hashem with both. Now the yetzer tov, the good inclination, the inclination for good, we understand how you serve Hashem with that. But the yetzer hara, how do you serve Hashem with the evil inclination? The answer is the way you... The answer is, you don't listen to him. That's how you serve Hashem with it. That would be the simple explanation. The Rashi says, b'chol levavcha, shelo yiyah libcha chalak al hamakim. Your heart shouldn't be divided about the Ribbono shel Olam. That means you should have full faith, full belief. You shouldn't have doubts. Okay. U'b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul. What does that mean? Rashi cites a Gemara in Brachas. Afilu hu neitel es nafshecha. Even if he takes your soul. You're supposed to love Hashem with all your soul means you love him so much that you will express your love for him even if it means giving up your life. Which we know is something that a Jew has to do under certain circumstances. U'v'chol me'aydecha. But what does v'chol me'aydecha mean? V'chol me'ayn harashi says, with all your possessions, with all your money. You have to love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, even if he takes your life, and with all your money. The Rashi continues, Yesh l'cha adem shememaynoi chabiv alav migufay. Some people like their money more than themselves. L'kach nemer b'chol mi'aydecha. That's what it has to say with all your money. Because you'd say to yourself, if you got to give up your life for Hashem, right? You got to express your love to Hashem that you're ready to go ahead and give up your life. Well, the more so, b'chol mi'aydecha, that you should be ready to give up your money. Why does the Torah have to say that? So Rashi tells us, well, you know, there are some people who, you know, they like their money more than their life, right? What was that old skit, right? The thief comes up to the guy and he says, your money or your life?
Yeah.
And he doesn't answer him. He says, your money or your life? He doesn't answer him. He says, your money or your life? He goes, I'm thinking.
That's Jack Benny.
Yeah. Okay. I heard that line from year people in the show way back.
That's what he said that on the program.
Okay. Now, so basically, you know, so it's a good joke, but, you know, there's some truth to it. There's some truth to it. I mean, there's what to talk about, but there's some truth to it. You know, you can have a person who says, oh, the Rabbanu Shalom wants me to give up my life. Of course I give up my life. Right? If somebody says, bow down to an idol, I'll kill you. Of course. They tell me to shmadzach, you know, give up Yiddishkeit and accept another religion. I give up my life like all those other people who give up their life. Okay? Can you give me an adava? Can you give me a donation? No. can't afford it. Sorry. Right? So, therefore, the Torah has to go ahead and stress both. Okay. Now, when the Torah says, uvachol nafshecha, with all your soul. So Rashi says that means, afiluhu neitelas nafshecha, with all your soul means with all your soul. You have to be ready to give it your soul. And the Gemara in Brachas tells us the famous story of Rabbi Akiva, that when Rabbi Akiva was being killed, when they were taking the iron, the rakes, and raking his skin and tearing his flesh, so his students saw him mumbling something. And they basically bent down to listen to what he was saying, and he was saying Shema. And his student said, basically, even now? And Rabbi Akiva responded, my whole life I've been waiting to fulfill this. The Torah says, love Hashem with all your soul. And that means even you have to express your love to Hashem, even that means giving up your soul. Rabbi Akiva says, my whole life I waited for this. And now I'm finally fulfilling it.
And therefore
he said Shema at that time. Okay. So basically we understand b'chol nafshecha with all your soul to mean literally your soul. But there are many commentaries that point out that actually the word nefesh does not always have to mean your actual soul. But rather we find Im yesh es nafshecha to mean if it's with your soul, We find that to be to mean if it's your desire. Sometimes the word nefesh, your soul, means your desire. And we have a pasuk in Yeshus Nafshecha. Can't remember the rest of the words. But in Yeshus Nafshecha, can't remember the rest of the pasuk. But there it means, if it's with your soul, means if you're willing, if you desire. And therefore, they say that when Rashi says, quoting the Gemara, that you should love Hashem even if he's taking your nefesh, even if he's taking your soul, meaning you got to be willing to give up your nefesh to the Ribbono Shel Olam, included in that is not just your life, but your desires. When we talk of, there's a concept called Mesiras Nefesh, giving up the soul. And the highest level of Mesiras Nefesh, giving up the soul, is giving up your life. But many commentaries say that actually the basic, the essential Mesiras Nefesh, the essential giving up your soul, the essential with all your soul being mentioned here, is actually going against your desire. You want to do one thing, right? And you give up what you want to do in order to do what Hashem wants, that is already a fulfillment of this idea, uvachol nafshecha, with all your soul. This is not only fulfilled by going ahead and dying. There's actually a famous Chassidish Sefer, I think it's the Tzetel Katan from the Rebbe Bela Melech, who says that when you say Shema, and you say uvachol nafshecha, that you're saying you love Hashem with all your heart, you should imagine that there are people trying to force you to abandon Yiddishkeit, to take on a different religion, and there's this large fire that they're threatening to throw you into, and that you're ready to do it. And every day you should imagine that. And when you do that, you'll fulfill a pasuk that says, Ki alecha ragnu kol hayom, we have been killed for you every day. You imagine dying to sanctify Hashem's name. That's what he says. But this concept can also be fulfilled every time, right? There's something that your nature goes against. Every time there's something you want to do or you don't want to do. You're too tired to go learn. You're too tired to go daven. You know, you don't want to give the tzedakah. You don't want to give up the time to help this person. And you go against either your nature that holds you back, your desires that hold you back, and you overcome that, you give that up for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's also a fulfillment of V'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha, love Hashem your God, b'chol nafshecha, with all your nefesh. Because nefesh can also mean with all your desires. Your willingness to go ahead and give up what you want for the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam is a fulfillment of this very, very important and basic concept of Yiddishkeit, to love Hashem with all your soul. And there's an interesting argument that we can make, you know, which one's easier, which one's harder? Is it harder to give up your life through Ribbono Shel Olam, or is it harder to give up what you want? Well, it depends, you know. Giving up your life is not easy. But giving up what you want is something you got to do all the time. It's a constant thing. It's constant. It's a constant challenge in life. So in some ways, fulfilling b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, meaning with all your desires, giving up all your desires for the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's a big thing, you know. Even to give up some of them is a big thing. So this idea of b'chol nafshecha, with all your soul, it's important to know that it's got this concept of course, the highest level of all your soul, meaning literally giving up your soul, but it also means giving up your desires to the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's also, you can also express your love for the Ribbono Shel Olam in doing that. And doing that, and doing b'chol avcha, with all your desires, on a constant basis. All right. So that's the conclusion about the discussion for this week's parsha. I want to talk a little bit now about the yontif tonight. There's a yontif tonight. You know that? There's a yontif tonight. Funny.
What's today? 9.
The yontif tonight. It's called Tu B'Av, the 15th day of Av. Right? The Mishnah in Taina says, Yisrael, there were not any greater holidays for the Jewish people. The 15th day of Av and Yom Kippur were the greatest holidays for the Jewish people. So what is it about Tu B'Av exactly? What's so great about it? Now we know that Tu B'Av was the day that was the Shaduchim day, That was a day where the eligible women and the eligible men basically went out and people made shidduchim. That's how they did it. That's how they did it. Okay, we're on tape. Let's be careful. This is what they went in and this is with the shidduchim. They would go out and people would see and they made the shidduchim. Now, why was that they chosen to be that way? So we'll see if we'll get there. But in essence, you know, the first step to explain what the comparison between the 15th and Av and Yom Kippur is, right? I mean, Yom Kippur, we know that's the holiest day of the year. It's a yontif, we fast. I mean, Chamesh Tu B'Av, we can basically ignore it if we wanted to. You know, there's not much that we do. We don't say Tachanun, but there's not much that we do. You know, some people have a custom to make a bonfire on the 15th of Av. You know, but I'm saying it's not your biggest holiday. So, I mean, clearly it was a big holiday in the sense of you know, in the times of Beis Hamikdash, they made the Shidduchim. That's an important thing. But what's the essence of the day exactly? What is so special about the day? So one explanation is based on a Medrash. I think it's definitely a Medrash. I don't think the Gemara says it, but the Medrash definitely says it. And that is that the Gemara that we know that every Tisha B'Av, right? Everybody had Yartzad and Tisha B'Av in the desert. Everybody had Yartzad and Tisha B'Av. Because every Tisha B'Av, the people of that generation, between 20 and 60 at the time of the spies, they were supposed to die over the next 38 years or so, right? When did they die? Well, I don't know if some of them died before, but a lot of them died every Tisha B'Av. Every Tisha B'Av, they dug graves in the desert. Everybody dug graves in the desert. And everybody laid down and went to sleep in those graves. And if you woke up the next day, you made it for the next year. And if you didn't, that meant that the Rebbe Shlomo said, now is when your time is up. But everybody had to die there because they couldn't enter the land of Eretz Yisrael. So Tisha B'Av was a pretty serious day in the desert. It started serious with the fact that it was a day that they cried over the spies. And then following that for many years, that was a day that around 50, if you make a calculation, it's about 15,000 people every year on Tisha B'Av that are dying, right? You had 600,000 people between the age of 20 and 60, right? There's a lot of people dying that day. Okay, so came the last Tisha B'Av of when this should have happened, all right? Those last remaining people dug their graves, went to sleep, and they all woke up.
They all woke up, yeah.
So they figure, you know, maybe we miscalculated. And they did it and repeated it over and over again until the 15th of Av when they saw the full moon. And it was like, okay, you know, we're apparently being saved. The Rabbanu Shalom has rescinded the decree, which means the Rabbanu Shalom has forgiven us for the sin of the spies and decided to end the decree early. So that's a big yontif. But the yontif is the point that Tu B'Av, the 15th of Av, was the day that Rabbanu Shalom showed that he forgave us for the sin of the spies. So it's like Yom Kippur in that sense. The Yom Kippur is a day of forgiveness. And the 50th day of Av was a day of forgiveness. In the sense that it was clear to the Jewish people that they were forgiven for the sin of the spies. So that's one thing that happened on the 15th of Av.
We don't say Tachan.
Right. Now, another thing that happened on the 15th of Av was we actually learned this a few weeks ago. We read this a few weeks ago. We had the story of the daughters of Tzlafchad. The father had died, had no sons. They went to Moshe and said, why should our land go to a different family? It should stay with us. Moshe says to Moshe, they're right. At the end of Parshas Maaseh, they were from the tribe of Manasseh. So the people of Manasseh say, you know, it's very good that the daughters of Tzlafchad inherited their father's land, but if they marry somebody from a different tribe, then the land's going to go to the man in a different tribe, and it's going to be taken away from our tribe. So Moshe Rabbeinu told them, from now on, you can only marry somebody from your tribe. So they married their cousins, all right? And for years, this went on. Now, in the Sefer Shoftim, there is the very tragic story of Pelegish Megiva, where the tribe of Binyamin perpetrated a terrible sin. Basically, the Jewish people went and fought a war with the tribe of Binyamin to punish them for what happened. The tribe of Binyamin was almost annihilated. They made a vow, no one from other tribes can marry into the tribe of Binyamin. And at a certain point of time, the tribe of Binyamin, because of this, was almost going to die out. And because of that, they decided to go back. And they said, they figured out, you know, they were able to deduce that the promise, meaning the binding promise not to marry, was really only for the original generation who took that on. No one else was obligated to keep it, but they kept it. Now we're rescinding it. And at the same time they rescinded that marriage issue, right, that marriage limitation, they also rescinded this law about the daughters who inherit their father's land, that they can only marry from their own tribe. That was also only rescinded. And they also there were derived from the Torah that it only applied to that generation as a binding obligation. After that, if people wanted to change, they could change. So basically, you know, the joy of, at least to put it this way, the joy that they rescinded the vow against the tribe of Benjamin allowed the tribe of Benjamin to rebuild itself. Otherwise, they would have died out. So a tribe of the Jewish people was saved. And the fact that now, and it seems that this idea of being able for intermarrying tribes was a common thing. And the B'nai Slavcha, this whole idea of limiting these women who they can marry, was something that, you know, they felt it was necessary, but when they rescinded it, it was actually a joyous thing that now there's no limitation. The tribes can be together more. More people from different tribes can be together, and that increases unity amongst the Jewish people. So the other two things that happened on the 15th of Av also contributed to the joy of that day. Another thing that took place on the 15th day of Av is the fact that, just one second, okay, right. Another thing is that we know that the, what time is it?
20
after.
5
okay. Another thing that happened on Tu B'Av is the fact that we know there was a split amongst the kingdom of the Jewish people. There was the Malchus Yehuda, the Judean kingdom, and Malchus Yisrael, the Israelite kingdom. The first king of the Israelite kingdom was a man named Yeravam ben Nevat, a very great man, but a very very complicated man. And Yeravam ben Nevat, he realized that if the people in his kingdom will go on Yontif to Yerushalayim, then they're going to see that he has to stand because he's not from Malchus, because he's not from the Davidic dynasty. Rechavim is going to sit. People are going to say, hey, he's the real king. So he had to stop them from going to the Beis HaMikdash. So what did he do? He made two golden calves. And he said, you can pray here. Okay. The last king of the kingdom of the Malchus Yisrael, Hoshea ben Ela, he took those idols down. And he allowed the Jewish people to go back to Yerushalayim. So basically, again, the Jewish people now, were all those Jews, although it didn't take long until they were exiled, but all those Jews now were able to, number one, be together again with the Jews of the other kingdom, and number two, they could go back to the Beis HaMikdash. That was another great reason to rejoice.
Like 1 million to 1.5 million in the northern.
Okay. Like and the final thing that's brought down is that the 15th of Av was the last day that you could bring wood for the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash. Basically, the way I've seen this explained, you know, it's not like there was a lot of trees and wood in the land of in Eretz Yisrael by the second Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, it was a big job getting wood. That's why I saw it brought down. We know that the Gemara in Tainus tells us that there were specific families who had the right to do that, right? Certain families had the rights over the year to go ahead and bring the wood. And when they brought the wood, it was a kayanta for them. The Gemara says on the 15th day of Av, you cannot bring any more wood after that. Because once by the 15th of Av, it's already the sun, the heat of the sun starts to decrease, and the wood doesn't get dried out enough that it shouldn't become wormy. So the 15th of Av was the day that there was no more bringing wood. All the wood that was now going to be necessary for the rest for the Beis HaMikdash for the rest of the winter until the next time it starts up had to be in. And it concluded on the 15th of Av. So you could explain that it was a joyous time because of the fact that now they had all the wood they needed for the Karbanis. But the Gemara points out something very interesting. The Gemara there says, again, the reason is because from the 15th of Av, the sun gets weaker, so they couldn't cut wood for the Mizbeach because they wouldn't dry out enough. And the Gemara says, Mikan ve'elach, from here on, from the 15th of Av and on, the Maisif Yosef, whoever adds time onto his learning, well, Yosef, he'll years of life will be added onto him. Udalam Yosef, if you don't add on time for learning, Yosef, you'll be gathered in. And the explanation is that now that they didn't have, now that the, now basically the idea is that the sun is getting weaker means the days are getting shorter. The nights are getting longer. If the nights are getting longer, that means there's less time to work, more time to learn. So this is the time where you got to start getting your act together, right? And making sure that you use that time at night more for learning. So some learn the joy of the 15th of Av was the fact that now there's more time to learn. That's the joy. So although, again, bringing the wood was a tremendous mitzvah, it was a tremendous merit, it was even a holiday, but it became a holiday to stop. Why? Because now there is more time to study Torah.